The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Cannot keep doing what we're doing because we keep getting reports in my inbox every morning, thanks to my friend, my favorite climate convert, D.R. Tucker, about how we are emitting even more, ever more, now record amounts of CO2 into the atmosphere, the latest coming from the IEA. We knew this, but every time I see it, I just think, what is it going to take to wake up America, wake up our politicians, wake up our leaders, wake up the public, really? And we do our best here at the Green Front to bring you the latest information and even some inspiration mixed in on all the issues that are of utmost importance to each and every one of us, not only climate change, but what's going on with our oceans. We're going to be talking about that today. And just all the environmental challenges that we're faced with. Well, you know, if you turn on the television and all the Republican debates, it's all about the economy. It's all about jobs. Important, of course, but I'm wondering if there's going to be a debate on our energy and environmental situation. And to bring D.R. Tucker in now, I think would be a good idea because he's going to be my co-host for these first couple of segments. And D.R., you watch that stuff and you follow that. Is there any plan to discuss climate change and these other issues in this current crop of Republican presidential candidates?
Well, last weekend, Mitt Romney is saying that he exhales carbon dioxide, so I guess he has reversed everything he claimed in his book, No Apology. I guess he is making an apology for having once embraced the science.
Other than his own personal CO2 emissions, all that hot air, seriously, are they planning to have any kind of debate to address these issues? If it comes up in passing, it's just, you know, to promote nuclear or nuclear, as they often say, that's usually the extent of it, or maybe natural gas, fracking, as an energy source.
There's a part of me that doesn't want them to have this debate because it'll simply give an opportunity for Rick Perry and Herman Cain to start smearing climate scientists again. I think at this point, everybody who knows of the issue kind of knows that the Republicans are under pressure from the conservative wing of the party to basically not acknowledge any need for alternative energy or not acknowledge any sort of risk to the environment, and that presents a golden opportunity to President Obama to really turn this into a wedge issue that could benefit him in 2012.
You have a golden tone to your voice, DR. You've got a nice radio voice. I really am excited to have you co-hosting with me today. I decided to do that because you are just a font of information and inspiration with all the stories you send us. Inspiration, I put that in quotes because usually we vent because there's so much to blow off steam about in terms of the continuing, you know, effort to suppress scientific realities, at least from a certain corner. We could go on about that all day, and I'm sure we will touch on it, but I want to bring in your two friends. You were kind enough to introduce me to Carol Oldham and Joe Elcock. Why don't you tell our audience a little bit more about these guests joining us in this segment, since they are your contacts, and I really appreciate your bringing them to the Green Front.
Yes, Carol Oldham and Joel Elcock are with the National Wildlife Federation. The National Wildlife Federation is America's largest conservation organization, a nonprofit that works to inspire Americans to protect wildlife for our children's future. It's great to have them with us today.
Welcome.
Good to be here.
Very familiar with your fabulous organization. It's been one of my favorites over the years, and I haven't had anyone from the National Wildlife Federation on for some time, so really pleased to have this opportunity. Thanks to each of you for taking time on this day before Thanksgiving, when you otherwise might be either cooking or traveling, to share with us a little bit about what each of you is working on and sort of, you know, what your thoughts are. Let's begin with, you know, this now election year. We are, you know, E-1 leading in the year leading up to the November general elections. What do you think about what you're seeing? Let's begin with you, Carol.
Sure. I'm really sad that we're not actually having a deeper conversation about energy and about climate change, because I think it is really timely. You know, studies keep coming out that show that levels that are being emitted are higher than expected. You know, our Arctic ice is disappearing, And, I mean, we're doing a lot of work on the Clean Air Act and trying to update the Clean Air Act, and we're finding that there are a lot of folks who don't want to talk about that, even though it's all about America's health and about protecting our outdoors.
And just another study I just heard this week about how pollution is causing more and more illness in younger Americans and children. And, you know, if we are nothing else, we are sort of self-interested, we Americans, and that includes our children, or it certainly should, and the health of our kids. So where is the disconnect? Where is that occurring?
That's a good question, and I don't actually have an answer to it. I wish I did. If I knew why it was happening, I might have some way to stop it.
Do you think it's a matter of people taking clean air for granted?
I think part of the disconnect is that, you know, with all the money in politics today, you know, you hear all these things about, well, you know, regulations to clean up the air will cost jobs. Well, that's not coming from any real scientific study. It's coming from the coal lobby. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of money at stake here. And, you know, we really need to push back and do the right thing because, you know, what you're hearing out there in the debate isn't necessarily accurate.
And if I see one more ad from the clean coal people, I think I'm going to vomit because I was in the gym yesterday in the women's exercise room on the treadmill, and, you know, it comes on, and I see these, you know, otherwise intelligent women watching the ad, and I shake my head and kind of look at them to see if they get that this is bogus, and, you know, it doesn't seem to register with people.
Well, yeah,
I sometimes start a conversation about it, and I'm just appalled and amazed at how many people don't really know that that's completely, you know, false.
And the argument is about jobs. I mean, the coal industry wants to keep these, you know, coal mining jobs, which are extremely dangerous and hazardous and pollute the air, and keep from, you know, retrofitting, say, coal-fired power plants to take emissions out of the air, which would create thousands of jobs. And, you know, right now the people who, you know, work in the building trades and so forth, they're looking at like 35-40% unemployment, and it's an actual easy way to really jumpstart this economy by putting people to work to actually save some money. And, you know, how much does it cost to have, you know, 17,000 premature deaths and 11,000 heart attacks and 120,000 childhood asthma cases that wouldn't have happened if we had done the right thing and, you know, gone through with initiating these clean air standards?
Well, talk about a disconnect. I mean, you mentioned the crux of the problem. Here we have this, you know, environmental crises, multiple, you know, threats to our existence, our survivability, our thrivability on this one and only habitable planet. You know, we have a jobs crisis. And why are we not seeing this, you know, everybody, you know, on deck, we have an emergency, let's retrain people to retrofit buildings, to, you know, really invest in the clean energy economy. Instead, we're, you know, there, you know, twiddling while home is burning. They're continuing to debate. And there's such a lack of leadership that, and when you hear, well, we got to deal with the economy first and jobs first, as you're saying, it's such a misguided view. And what's it going to take to really, you know, put these two needs together and come up with solutions?
The good news is that there is some leadership happening more on a state level than a federal level. But, like, for instance, you know, we've got the Green Communities Act here in Massachusetts. Maine is looking at a ballot initiative to increase efficiency and to increase the renewable energy standard there. So there are some good things happening right here in this region. It's just the problem is that it's not happening on a federal level.
Exactly. And a lot going on locally as well, and maybe mm-hmm. that's where it's going to come from. But, you know, of course we need to have it at all levels of government, given the urgencies.
On the other hand, the EPA is pushing forward with, you know, updating their regulations. And over the next, you know, 6 months to 2 years or whatever, it's going to be a really crucial time for just average, ordinary people to pay attention to what's going on in Congress because, you know, they're going to be working to try to cut trillions of dollars from the budget. And, you know, historically, I can't remember the who cited this, but it's whenever you do cutbacks like this, the environmental community and clean air regulations, they always get hit disproportionately. And so you know, every time that something turns, you know, comes out of Congress, there's going to be an attempt to put some rider on there to push back these regulations. And the other thing that isn't really mentioned, and I hear it a lot more from small businesses, and is that, look, we need to know what our planning is going to be for the next 5 years, for the next 10 years. What, you know, how are we going to invest in infrastructure? And we need to know what the rules are. We can figure it out. You know, we were able to figure out what the child labor laws, you know, impacted, how they impacted us, and, you know, make a profit. When OSHA came along, we could adjust our ways and make a profit. And what I think business is more and more crying out for is, tell us what the rules are so we can go out and plan accordingly.
And they know something needs to happen. It's just a question of when it's going to happen, and they want that certainty.
Right. And, DR, you saw that interview, maybe all of you did, with Lisa Jackson on Rachel Maddow a few days ago. I thought that was excellent. I wish it was on, you know, CNN to a wider audience. But I thought she really, you know, she's a strong figure, and Lord knows she has to be during these times, because there are, you know, people out, including presidential candidates, to, quote, abolish the EPA, which is just astonishing given the state of our environment.
And the thing I liked about that interview was that she started off showing a series of clips from Richard Nixon's 1970 State of the Union address, indicating a need to have an EPA, and also showing photos from, you know, the polluted areas of the country prior to the establishment of the EPA, just to sort of give an indication of how far the Republican Party has deviated from that standard, from the Nixon standard. Who, I mean, you know, Nixon had his flaws to be sure, but at least he recognized that environmental concerns were, as he put it, a cause beyond party and faction. And now you try to find one Republican to say that today, and it's like the proverbial fish in a barrel.
And you say, DR, you've got a lot of libertarian friends, maybe fewer by now, I don't know, and conservative Republicans who, you know, are just, you know, outraged any time there's any environmental victory or perceived victory, and are really, you know, openly, unabashedly in favor of demasculating, whatever the proper term is, the power, you know, for the EPA to do its job, to regulate.
As it happens, the other day I asked one libertarian acquaintance of mine what he made of the failure of Senator Rand Paul's effort to strip the EPA of its ability to regulate cross-state air pollution, and he claimed that, Rand Paul was just standing up for libertarian principle, and I responded, I guess libertarian principle means that my lungs are fine and the hell with yours, and he couldn't respond.
So much hypocrisy. Do you think the denial, the DIC, the denial industrial complex, is going to be a thing of the past very quickly here? I mean, given the evidence mounting up, are we seeing the last gasp of those who would, you know, not even just be skeptical, but would actually deny the presence of, you know, pollution, and in particular CO2 pollution, what it's doing to our climate stability?
Well, I don't think they're going away anytime soon, unfortunately. I wonder what Joe or Carol think. Do you think that somewhere along the line they start to lose power? I mean, I think they will lose power at some point, the way the tobacco industry did after their misrepresentations were exposed. But do you see these sort of Koch brothers types losing steam anytime soon?
Well, I see them losing credibility. When you look at the tornadoes that tore through Springfield and up on into Vermont, you know, these are really, as opposed to being theoretical ideas that scientists are talking about, these are real things that are affecting people's property and their livelihood. And if you look at, say, in Massachusetts, in 2006 numbers, there was about $1.5 billion spent in Massachusetts on hunting, fishing, and vacationing, and taking advantage of wildlife and so forth. And if we don't do something or keep going with what we already have with the EPA, you're going to see a 50 to 100% loss in stream habitat by 2050. And, you know, that's when it starts hitting you right in the face. That's when I think people will start saying, hey, well, I guess it really is real.
Well, I guess I was thinking of Charles Koch's inadvertent funding of the latest climate change research out of Berkeley, and wondered if anyone has heard anything close to a response from him. I know if anyone would know, probably DR.
His response is to build ports down in Venezuela to export that dirty coal over to China, which will end up, you know, landing right on our land again and in our water. Mm. So, the Koch brothers are making tons of money, and, you know, everything's good in their world, but, you know, I think pretty soon they might be on an island by themselves.
Even their own funded scientific conclusions that, in fact, man-made climate change is a real thing, and at least the temperature has gone up. They've acknowledged that.
And a lot of Americans really do make that link, I think. You know, their studies, recent polling has shown that a lot of people make the link between, you know, hotter summers, the crazy snowstorms that we've been having, the tornadoes in places where we don't usually have tornadoes. People are making that connection between that and global warming. And so I think that there is a general public understanding. It's just the problem is some of the loudest people are some of the ones that are most out of touch.
Let's talk about a victory. Looks like, you know, with the tar sands issue, or as my friend who didn't know about it said, what Tarzan issue are you talking about? Let's see. That's been kicked down the road, and, initially I thought that was kind of a setback, but in fact the environmental community, climate community, seem to think that that's positive because it means it will probably never happen.
Yeah, every delay ends up costing those companies a lot of money, and so the longer that you can hold them off, the more the chance of them not being able to afford it in the long run, and the more their chance of better alternatives coming along as well.
And also, perhaps just the increasing incontrovertible evidence of climate change, mm-hmm. Having arrived on our shores, that will be how many more seasons, and we've seen, incredible record-breaking destructive weather in each and every season, not overseas anymore, but in our own country.
Yeah.
As you just said. So I guess that probably is good news worth mentioning because so many people turned out for that. That really obviously made a difference when thousands of people turned out at the White House and were willing to be arrested a couple of different occasions, and one of them being, a two-week rally, and then most recently on November 6th. That shows that civil disobedience does have a role in this environmental climate movement.
Well,
yeah,
feels like you're rolling a rock up the hill like Sisyphus, in battling this stuff, but, it's when you're talking about, the climate deniers losing their power, one of the things that you're going to see is when these insurance companies say, we can't afford to take these losses anymore. And, when businesses start saying this is a problem, and I think we've gotten to that point, then all this work just kind of culminates. And, hopefully, 20 years down the line, we'll look back and say, oh, my God, I can't believe we were still fighting that fight back then. But I think this is a very pivotal time. If everyone can keep up the pressure and, keep educating people on the real, economic numbers on what it costs to pollute our air and, care for people that have these illnesses that they otherwise wouldn't have. I mean, that's another thing that we're not even talking about is how much, does all this cost in the healthcare system, which is a disaster to begin with, and, that's a big battle that is being fought in front of our eyes, and in climate, clean air is a big part of that.
And with, bronchitis, asthma, allergies, maybe attention deficit disorder, all this, some of it certainly tied to pollution, our children's health. I mean, it's hard to imagine, what could be more compelling than that, other than I think the most compelling piece of evidence I've ever seen in regards to, newborns and health is, right. The average baby is born with evidence of more than 200 trace amounts, but still 200 chemicals in the umbilical cords of newborn babies, and that coming out in the breast milk of women. I just had for the first time my metals checked in my blood, and very high in mercury, lead, cadmium, and I'm a healthy girl, grew up in the Bay Area where there's very little industry, live in Marin County where there's almost no industry, and it's very high, and I don't have any of the risk factors. Was not exposed to paints or enamels or any of those industrial sources of contamination, and I've been told I can't eat fish anymore. Well, that impacts my, I don't mean to sound, like I do it cavalierly, because I appreciate and actually say a prayer of thanks for every live being that ends up on our dinner table, but I can't eat fish anymore. A lot of people, if they had their metals checked, would find out they too are high in mercury and other contaminants. Why is this not rallying the masses when we are, clearly infected in our own bodies?
One of the things you see is if you look at the different polling that goes on, that don't quote me on the numbers, but somewhere like 86% of the general public are saying, yes, clean air is very important to me, and I support the Clean Air Act and the EPA. So, you know, the critical mass is there. So I guess the question is, how do we turn that critical mass into action that gets it done? And, you know, it's moving slowly, but, yeah, I think it's a matter of education and getting people out of their comfort zone a little bit to call their senator, to, you know, talk to their local officials, talk to their congressmen, and write letters to the editor and really make some noise, because the squeaky wheel does get the oil.
Yeah, there's a need for a more muscular environmental movement, and the numbers show, you're right, that it's out there, but it's not coalesced somehow. It, like you said, you know, the first thing to go is the environmental programs. You know, it's
exactly
the first place they cut because there's not the same, you know, outcry that we see on some other issues like healthcare, like jobs, and it really seems like it's going to take something like, well, I don't know, maybe a Green Tea Party, right, DR?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Rand Paul's clean air. He was trying to gut the Clean Air Act, and last week, and or maybe this week before. And I thought it was really interesting that we won that one. And I think part of it is that, you know, the mercury and the cross-state air pollution and those kinds of things, they are really big tent issues. Like NWF works a lot with sportsmen, and so people who fish and who have to throw the fish back rather than being able to fry it up, they understand why mercury shouldn't be being emitted into the air. And they really start caring about it once they understand what the problem is.
Hmm. Well, we're just about out of time. I want to ask for any final thoughts from you, Carol and Joe, and thank you for all your great work at the National Wildlife Federation.
Thank you. It's been great.
Any parting thoughts? What would you like people to focus on other than what we just said, letting their, you know, representatives know that they do feel strongly about this? Anything else that you would like to see happen? many things, I'm sure. But
I would say pay attention, if nothing else, and, you know, educate yourself and talk to your friends about it. And, you know, I think the more people know, you know, the society as a whole, it takes them a while to come around, you know, and, you know, an individual can be persuaded more easily than a society, but it just, you know, we just got to keep working at it and, you know, take that time to educate someone that might not know about mercury pollution or carbon pollution.
Well said, well put. DR is going to hang on with us for the next segment. We'll be speaking with Zach Alton of Oceana. Thanks so much, Carol and Joe.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You're listening to The Green Front. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg, co-hosting today with my good friend, D.R. Tucker. He is a moderate Republican, went from being a conservative Republican, thanks to his friends who are so conservative, and libertarians out there who don't want to believe in science, and that was enough to push him over towards the middle. And so I love his perspective, because on green issues, we speak with one voice, and we'll be back with another new voice, Zach, right after these messages.